Yeah, why
There is
not?
an ostrich farm
Girl,
like within walking distance of this place, and
have
we can
you,
go feed them.
and you've done this before, right? They're horrifying.
I believe
Okay.
it.
Literally, they had an ostrich farm when we went to Arizona and we drove by it, and Suzanne and Bill were like, we should stop. And I'm like, of course. And horrifying. Okay. First of all, they're much bigger than you think they are.
Oh, I'm excited to
Really
see that.
significantly bigger than you think. And so, I mean, I was a kid, I guess. So I was smaller than I am now, but I would still be very impressed. But either way, we go up and there's signs everywhere that says, do not feed with your hands. Like it is plastered everywhere. And they give you this bucket and you have two choices. You can either pour the bucket down the chute that will then get it to the other side of the fence where the ostriches are. Or you can try to pour it down the chute and have the ostriches peck the shit out of the bowl and make it fall out of your hand as they reach over the fence and just bow, 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 bow. It's so horrifying. And I'm over there holding the bucket and they're just like, whoa. And I'm like, ah! Just try not to die from ostrich pecks.
I'm so excited.
I'm
I could
excited
not
for
be more
you.
excited.
I need Chris to take a video the whole time because I want to be part of that experience with you.
Okay. All right.
Look at their feet, also. Their feet.
Oh,
Ugh. Ugh. I mean, look, but then look away really fast.
okay. All right.
Soak it in and then brain dump it.
We'll do it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are Mediocre
Mediocre
Content. And we're pulling a double shift, is what we're doing.
I mean, yeah.
I mean,
I guess
we are.
you could say it like that.
Yeah.
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 We're recording multiple podcasts
Because
today.
we love you guys so much,
Yes.
and we know how much mediocre content you need. And we're just here to bring it, you know?
Correct. Correct.
Also, we have life to attend to, so
Yeah, there is life happening.
there's a lot of life happening.
Shout out to Chris, who, when this episode comes out, graduated last Friday,
So
and
beautiful.
he's officially smart now. Congratulations to him.
Damn. I feel like he was smart before. I mean, I don't want to
He
say
was. He was. Yeah.
nothing,
He has a
but
piece of paper to prove it now, though.
hey, there you go.
Yeah. That's
Tree
right.
life.
That's right.
Love that for you guys. That's gonna be so fun.
Yeah.
Is it who said his parents are coming too? Just
Yep.
yeah.
Yep. The in-laws are visiting. We're very excited. It'll be
Yes.
good to see them. We haven't seen them in a long time.
Since the wedding or before after the wedding?
No, they came and visited us once when we first for Christmas when we first
Oh,
moved
that's
here.
right. No, you're right. Yeah,
Yeah, but
yeah,
it's
yeah.
been like a
It's been a
year and
long
some
time.
change. Yeah, it's been a
Yeah.
long time.
That's going to be
So, it'll
great.
be good to see them.
And they'll get to gush all over their sweet baby boy.
Yeah. And they'll
That's
see
very
the
fun.
cats again, which is exciting.
Honestly, who doesn't want to come and visit cats?
I,
Who's going to
not
complain?
I. I would love to
Yeah.
visit the cats.
I don't even care if it's a cat. You got an animal in there? That's who I want to see. That's who I
Yep.
have come for.
Yes, it'll be very exciting. I will be seeing. So we're going, before we move, we're going back to the East Coast to visit my family, and my brother has a cute dog named Sunny. Shout out to Sunny. And I'm obsessed with her. I'm so excited to see her.
Precious babies.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the life, man. I'm here for your pets.
I'm here for your pets. Right.
And honestly, I take no offense if you're here for my pets because sames.
Yeah. Love the pets.
You have animals in your good news this week, too.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Let's disclaim and then we will start with the animals in the good news. Okay.
Yeah.
So, we are not experts on anything. If you have come here to get any kind of advice, please don't take any advice from us. We can't accept that liability. But we are the place to learn about things that you may or may not have seen come across your For You page. So,
TikTok.
yeah, I mean, I'd be shocked if the Women's Hockey League was on your For You page. It would be very niche, I feel. Oh. If that was your, is that what you have?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's only because I follow all the NHL teams, I think.
Oh,
though.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I just started following them. Yeah.
You want it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're into hockey, it's not that weird. But right. Like for the general.
It's not coming up if you're not a hockey fan.
So anyway, not to offend. Sorry. I'll take
No,
it
it's fine. No, you're good.
Okay. So with that, I'm going to take y'all into the good news. We're talking about baby deer. I have like a small little baby deer story, which is appropriate for the first.
Yes.
For the first good news. So
I am grateful you included a picture.
I know. That was specifically for you. The Edinburgh Zoo has shared the first images of an adorable 2-week-old southern poodoo fawn, which is the second smallest deer in the world. So the baby is like hella small.
Hella small. So that baby a hella small.
It was born to first time parents, Violetta and Evan.
Evan. So cute.
The tiny female youngster is doing well and has been named Gia by keepers at the zoo, managed by the Royal Zoological Society of Scotland. Native to the forests of Chile and Argentina, poodoo are the smallest members of the deer family, with the larger of the two, the southern poodoo, standing at just 17.7 inches or 55 centimeters tall.
Oh my God.
When they are fully grown.
Oh my God.
Appearing somewhat like a hybrid, an adult southern poodoo has a stocky build with antlers that grow up and curve back, giving it the appearance of a goat.
Oh my God. That's a wide stance, my guy. Super solid.
Edinburgh Zoo's tiny new arrival weighed about 1.2 pounds at birth and less than a loaf of bread.
Oh my God, why are we comparing it to bread? It's like when we have when ladies have their babies and they go in, they're like, yours is the size of a lemon.
Right. in gestation.
Yeah.
No, and it's less than a loaf of bread. It's so cute. And she won't be able to be viewed by the public for the first few weeks of her life for reasonable reasons. But starting in July, visitors can see her under the watchful guidance of Violetta, her mom.
It's so soon.
I know.
I think it's like the week after this pod comes out.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We'll see her soon.
She's so cute.
They are so cute. Oh my goodness. If you don't know what it looks like, highly recommend looking at it, because I'm looking at it right now and I want one so bad.
It's the cutest deer you've ever seen.
It literally is. And deer are cute.
She's got her little spots too.
Yes. It's pretty stocky.
It's like Bambi, but like cuter.
It's like if Bambi was shrunk down like 10 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, didn't have childhood trauma.
No. Thanks, Disney. Damn. No, it's pretty accurate, actually.
I thought so. All right. So the next one is about pomegranates. And you're going to be like, Blair, why are you bringing up pomegranates? That's ridiculous.
But I love tell pomegranates.
You So this bodes well for you then.
Okay.
A substance naturally occurring in pomegranates can improve memory and the treatment of Alzheimer's disease in a new study that concluded.
Wow.
Forgetfulness, difficulty finding words, and confusion about time and place are some of the most common symptoms of Alzheimer's disease.
What we do in a pod.
Right. Literally us. And researchers at the University of Copenhagen have discovered that an ordinary fruit can help. Their study on mice with Alzheimer's shows that urolithin A, which is a naturally occurring substance in pomegranates, can, quote, alleviate memory problems and other consequences of dementia, end quote. This is good news for patients with dementia, which is a disease that is notoriously difficult to treat.
Yeah.
Even though the study was conducted on mouse models, the prospects are positive, and so far research has shown promising results for the substance. Clinical trials on humans are currently being planned. The substance improves brain function. Researchers specifically discovered that a specific molecule nicotinamide riboside, NAD, supplement plays a key role in neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, as it actively helps remove damaged mitochondria from the brain.
Which is important because mitochondria is essentially the what of the cell, Blair?
Everybody say it together. The powerhouse of the cell.
And it's true, because if you do a lot of biological research, you'll find that they think that it was its own thing, like however many years ago. So it's a really important part of the cells.
Totally. So many patients with neurodegenerative diseases, the cause of that is mitochondrial dysfunction, known as mitophagy. This means that the brain has difficulties removing weak mitochondria, which then accumulate and then deteriorate brain function. So if you have the urolithin A from pomegranates, removing the weak mitochondria from the brain as effectively as the NAD supplements, then it's very positive. But the only thing they haven't quite figured out is like how much urolithin A is needed to improve memory. So the dosages have not been solidified, which makes sense because they haven't done human studies yet.
Right. Right.
So eat your pomegranates.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be like, at this stage, they don't know like how much, so just don't overdo it.
Don't eat too many of those. Did they say how much of the substance is in a pomegranate?
No.
Okay.
Nope. They just said that it exists in the pomegranate.
No, that's fair. I'd just be curious, how much are you ingesting, if you just eat an entire pomegranate?
Right. And the biggest thing, so some would say also like why we have the NAD supplements. So like, why would we need the pomegranate chemical? And the reason for that is because the urolithin A from pomegranate seems to have less side effects than the NAD supplementation. Or you could also use them together.
Sure.
Which is always a positive. So less side effects in the mice trials, which is great because we hate side effects. Side effects are the worst.
Side effects are what make taking the medicine sometimes unbearable, which just sucks for people who are already suffering. So totally understand that. Well, that's good news.
Yeah.
I love pomegranates. I wonder if too. I mean, probably not, but I guess my brain was also like, well, could you drink pomegranate juice? Like they have like the tart cherry, which is supposed to be like as close to 100% as possible.
Yeah.
But I don't think you'd get as much because it's been processed at that point.
Right. Yeah. So this is what I'll say about juices in general. And I've also read that because I know green smoothies are very popular. Yeah. All that stuff is very popular. It is less effective. Like putting something in a different form than its natural state is less effective overall. So I would imagine, like you just said, that pomegranate juice would probably be less effective. Plus, they typically add sugar. And sugar is bad for dementia and Alzheimer's. Yeah. Yeah. For a variety of reasons. Y'all can look that up in your own time. So, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a professional researcher on this topic. But I would say the raw form of any food is better.
Yeah.
As long as it's edible. Than any other,
eat pineapple skins.
Well, like raw potato is.
I like raw potato.
Well, if you have to bake it to make it taste, to not be hard.
Just salt that bitch, you.
All right, fine. Eat your potatoes like apples. See if I care.
Can you imagine somebody just walking around with a raw potato?
Maybe in Ireland. I don't know.
Oh, actually, or Idaho for that matter.
Or Idaho.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. So
anyway, eat your vegetables. Eat your fruits.
Eat your fruits.
Raw. Be responsible.
Too bad this isn't the WWE episode anymore.
No.
But what it is yet another, can you even call the WWE a sport? I don't know. But this one is. we're going to talk about sports today. We actually did an episode similar to this, our NHL episode. I think it was called Let's Start with an Icebreaker or something like that. And the other reason it's topical at this moment, even though it's like weeks after this has occurred, is that we're currently going through the Stanley Cup season as well as the Walters Cup season, which is the females version. And at this point, we have decided whether the Edmonton Oilers or the Florida Panthers have won the Stanley Cup. So good luck to both teams. I don't know who won, but go Panthers. And also, we're going to do some women's hockey league history today. We'll talk about what teams they have. It's actually very cool because as of the 2023-2024 season, they have officially rolled out what I believe to be the six teams of the Professional Women's Hockey League. And like, I think this is like their first official big season, if I'm not mistaken, which also makes sense why they're so aggressively on social media right now as well. If you haven't followed them on TikTok, it's really cool. These women are so beautiful. They have amazing fashion sense. Like the videos that you see of the guys walking in with all their suits and stuff. Imagine this, but these ladies in like sequins and like professional hip wear, girl, they are done up.
Have you seen the entrances of the WNBA players?
No.
It's, first of all, they all slay. They all look so
good. That's what I mean. They all
However,
look so good.
I will say that these poor women, first of all, they're already like 6 foot, like on the ground.
So tall.
Like straight up.
Yeah.
But then the stylists have decided to put them in heels. And
yes!
Why? These women have not walked in heels before. And or like some
and
of
it
them
shows.
You can tell and it's
oh no,
they look like baby deer and I feel so bad for them because I feel like the stylist should know better and just put them in like cool sneakers.
They're WNBA players. Not that you can't wear heels as an athlete, but like if you're already 6'11",
right,
you probably don't need it.
Right. So I just thought that's a lovely little tidbit. Not to hate on them because they're wonderful and amazing.
But
and
they're
if you want to wear heels, you
stylist.
Can totally do that. But it is funny watching them walk because they're already so tall to begin with. And
so tall. Oh my goodness. No, these girls are in like, I saw one outfit choice that was like these beautiful like cowgirl boots and she had the fringe on or whatever. She looked so good. It was so cute. Highly recommend. Just take a look. Feel free. Take a look. Tell me what you think. Anyway,
as the woman who was about to make me wear cowgirl boots to her wedding as a bridesmaid.
I mean, listen here, Miss Taylor Swift. She used to have teardrops on her guitar, so I don't want to hear it.
I feel that.
Yeah. So anyway, bottom line is they have a TikTok. Highly recommend checking it out. They're very cool, and they do a lot of clips of them actually playing the game as well, which is fun. So anyway, we've got the cup for the dudes. We've got the cup for the ladies. But the Stanley Cup was actually something that was donated by Lord Stanley of Preston in 1892. He was the Governor General of Canada at the time. And I think we talked about that when we did the NHL episode, but I couldn't remember. So I stuck it in here again, just in case. But during the Cup's 5-year term in Ottawa, Canada, that was from 1888 to 1893, women's hockey was starting to take off and get really highly noticed in the area as well. When Stanley arrived to his Canadian residence, which was Rideau Hall, is what I'm going to say. And that was in 1888. He came with his wife and 4 children, 3 sons and a daughter. The daughter's name was Lady Isabel, which is so pretty.
Wow.
And while the men in the family, of course, were like, yeah, hockey, let's go. Little Isabel was also like, yes, please. And she encouraged her father to build an outdoor rink in the gardens of this hall during the winter months. In 1890, Isabel was quite possibly the first woman photographed playing the game, and she promoted the sport among women with the same fervor her father promoted amateur hockey for the men's side. So it's kind of like a double team, you know?
Nice.
And on 11 February 1891, the first account of a women's hockey game appeared in the Ottawa Citizen, and a year later, similar notice was published in a newspaper called in Barrie, Ontario. The first women's club team was formed at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, where the Love Me Littles, which was named because of the lack of support from men in the community.
We love that.
We love it. Made their own history. They wore bright yellow sweaters with a huge Q on the front because it was Queensland University.
Sure.
And they were led by the great Marion Fraser. I don't know who that is, but if you're from Canada, maybe you do. And after a few years, the team would change its name to the Morning Glories, which I think is so much better.
So much better.
And they became the women's hockey team at that Canadian university level, which is very cool. By the early 1900s, as female players by the name of Ava Ault became known as the Queen of Ice, this really started to take off in kind of a grander scale. Ault, in particular, began playing her career during the years of the First World War, joining the Ottawa Alerts in 1950. She also helped gain traction of the game for women, like another female player, Albertine Lepensi. She was known as the Miracle Maid, and this is because Lepensi began playing for the Cornwall Victorias at 16 years old, and from 1915 to 1918, the Victorias never lost a game with Lepensi specifically in that lineup, and would regularly score half a dozen goals in a single game, with her career high of 15 in a 21-0 victory, which is insanity.
That's 3 years of not losing a game.
Absolutely. And so she earned the Miracle Maid nickname and was also considered the first Canadian female hockey superstar, which I feel like is a title she earned very well. This would also become the beginning of the women's championship in hockey as of 1906, the first being Alberta Provincial Women's Championship Tournament, which was held in Banff Winter Carnival. So,
oh, cool. I've been to Banff.
Nice. I like saying Banff.
Banff.
In time, the game would, of course, begin to spread into universities in Quebec and Ontario and the Maritimes before moving west. In 1921, the University of Toronto won the first national championship, defeating McGill. And at this time, Bobby Rosenfeld and Myrtle Cook, who were former track stars and hockey players in their own rights, would become Canada's first women's sports reporters, who would specialize in hockey during the winter season, of course, and give everybody the play-by-play. In 1978, Rosenfeld's name would be lent to the award by Canada's best female athlete. And additionally, Elizabeth Graham, who was goalie for Queen's University in Kingston, made history February 7, 1927, as the first credited netminder to wear a mask in a game using a fencing cage.
Nice.
Yeah.
For her. Safety first.
Safety first. Please protect your faces. While university hockey would flourish, of course, the women's game reached a crescendo of sorts during the 1930s when the unstoppable Hilda Ranscombe and the Preston Rivulettes dominated the sport. Coming from Preston, Ontario, which is now Cambridge, the Rivs, which was just their nickname, barnstormed across the country and won virtually every game they played, which was unheard of. But with the onset of the war in 1939, their impact unfortunately got cut short, like a lot of things during that time, unfortunately. Yeah. And after 1945, unfortunately, it would take a long time for the women's teams to start resurging and getting back on their feet and their collective expertise in the athletes realm.
This reminds me a little bit of like the basketball episode where, you know, there was a lot of other things happening during the war where women were needed for other.
It's true.
Typical, like for other things. And so,
yeah,
their sports and their like careers and all that.
Their
kind
progress.
Of stuff, their progress got put on hold. Yeah.
It's true. And war does that in general. But unfortunately, you see it a lot in like the women's sports and like other
women's extracurricular
functions.
Activities.
Yeah. You know, if you're trying to take care of the house while all the dudes are away, I totally get that. It just kind of sucks, you know?
Yep.
So after the war, Now we're in the 1950s. The true challenges of girls and women came to Canada when Abby Hoffman, who was a 9-year-old girl, was not permitted to play on a boys' team. That's pretty typical. She changed her name to Ab, A-B, and pretended to be a boy, ending up on a team in Toronto. So we got like the hockey version of Mulan here.
I was going to say she Mulan'd that real well. She did.
Of course, the league did eventually find out she was a girl and they did expel her. She said, rats. Spoiled again. But Hoffman's parents ended up taking this fight directly to the Ontario Supreme Court and won, and made her the first and thankfully not the last girl that would have to fight for her, or like fight for her equality, but also say, we're just as good as you and we're going to fight for our position here in this sport.
Yeah.
Which is huge and sad at the same time. Also in the 60s, the Women's Intercollegiate Athletic Union and the Ontario Quebec University Athletic Association, which is a mouthful, merged to form what is known as the Ontario Women's Inter-University Athletic Association. I feel like they just took those names and just smushed them together.
They literally did.
And, but they were responsible for essentially being that resurrection for women's hockey. And it was instrumental with the exposition games being played between Guelph, McMaster, U of T, McGill, Queens, and later Western. So all these are schools. And by 1961, 1962, it was an intercollegiate league. And this is also when the Central Ontario Women's Hockey League was formed, or COWHL. All of those names basically mean that this was taking off again and becoming so prevalent that individual schools started making individual leagues in order to participate in these competitions specific to women. In 1966, Brown University would create their first women's hockey league in the United States, and this would be called the Pembroke Pandas. Adorable.
Cute.
They made history and would pave the way for more American colleges to create teams, particularly in the early 1970s, although there were many years that would follow prior to national championships being held. By the 1970s, though, there was a player called Shirley Cameron, and she would become hockey's first star of the modern era. She would help found the Edmonton Chimos? I don't know.
Chimos, I think.
Yeah, C-H-I-M-O-S. However, without doubt, the most important event in the women's game that would connect the past to present came in 1975 when Fran Ryder established the Ontario Women's Hockey Association. For the first time, there was a group dedicated entirely to girls and women and growing the sport to make it more accessible. And the organization's impact across the world in the last half century has been immeasurable, and it is that organization that would actually bring the Women's World Championship to Brampton, Ontario in April 2023. So we're talking very recent even associations for things in the 70s that were happening. Lots of impacts. While the superstar lineage in Canada can be traced from Angela James to Haley Wickenheiser to Marie-Philippe Poulin, the first real star player was Edmondson Shirley Cameron, who we just talked about, who was establishing those Edmondson Chimos. And she wore the C for Canada at her first International Ice Hockey Foundation Women's Worlds in Ottawa 1990. Because of the OWHA, which is the organization that was founded because of her, and because of her individual success, a true national championship was created in Canada in 1982 to unify the game coast to coast and give women a single-minded purpose that previously didn't exist, because the NHL obviously had like their Stanley Cup finals and all of their end of regular season games that would trigger all the brackets, but women didn't really have that opportunity yet. And so this would really set that into motion for them. That same year, the Naisten SM Sarja was established in Finland. I apologize if I butchered that, which was the first national league of a major hockey country in Europe. So now it's making its way outside of the North American area. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, Sweden would introduce an unofficial national championship that would blossom into greater popularity for the game and organized play. So establishing everywhere. All these initiatives within various countries between North America and Europe would finally come together in 1987 when Ryder established the first truly international women's world championships. Played in Toronto, it featured 8 teams and would prove extremely successful. Out of this formed the International Ice Hockey Foundation and European Women's Championship, played in 1989 in Dusseldorf in Ratingen, Germany, with Finland as the first winner. So go Finland. Nice. I guess so. Yeah. The IIHF is a worldwide governing body for ice hockey that is literally internationally recognized. It is based in Zurich, Switzerland, and has 82 members, or 82 member countries. I apologize. And it also maintains the world ranking based on international ice hockey tournaments. A year later, the IIHF would host the first Women's Worlds, and it was onwards and upwards after that. 1992, Canada's Manon Raume. Made history by playing a period of an NHL exhibition game for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And in 1997, the IIHF mandated that all on-ice officials at the Women's Worlds should be women. So that's nice. Kind of neat.
We like that.
Yes. That year was also the start of the IIHF commitment to an annual World Women's in non-Olympic years. And a year later, more history was made when the women played in Nagano, the first women's hockey league, as a medal sport at the games. So cool.
Can I just say something real quick?
Of course you can.
The idea that Tampa Bay, so like I associate hockey with like cold climates, right?
Sure. Yeah, I know. There's two in Florida.
Tampa Bay has a hockey team is outrageous because first of all, the cost to have a hockey rink in a warm climate is astronomical. Mm-hmm. And also, like, why? I bet nobody in Florida. I mean,
everyone loves it.
Well, yes, but like nobody in Florida, I feel like a little boy or a little girl growing up in Florida wouldn't, their first thing wouldn't be, oh, let me go play hockey.
Apparently you'd be surprised.
Okay.
I thought the same thing. I was like, no way. They care as much about this as they do like baseball or football, you know, like stuff like that. But apparently, specifically with Tampa Bay Lightning and the Florida Panthers, they are like gung-ho, ready to go. Isn't it weird?
I think so. I mean, I just, it's like so much more natural, like for
Canada.
Canadians and like upper, like upper Northeast.
Yeah, like the Boston America. Bruins. This makes sense.
It's like integrated into the culture. They have the season that's necessary for it, even though I don't, they don't like practice out on a frozen pond or whatever, but like, I mean, they might, but I don't know.
The Krakens do have an outdoor one. It's very cool.
Do they really?
Well, that's during they did like a throwback game or something at home, and it was all outdoors, and they were throwing fish as they entered the ring. It was very cool. Yeah, so they do, but like Florida is kind of weird.
I just think it's weird. That's all. I mean,
it is weird
as far as like a sports franchise.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
In Florida, I feel like it's super weird.
No, you're right.
I mean, to each his own, I guess.
It would be like if there was some kind of tropical game in Florida, it'd be weird to see it in Canada. Like, it's just like, how did you get up there?
Right.
Yeah. No, I get you. I thought the same thing.
Like, noodling. I feel like you can't do that in Canada.
What's
like
noodling?
With the catfish where they like,
huh?
You've never seen this?
Oh, no.
So it's, I don't think it's not an official sport, but it's like a show that they had around the time of like Duck Dynasty. And
oh,
like
okay.
That.
Yeah.
So it was a show where people go into these like marshes or swamps
and they grab them with their hands.
They stick their arms in the like little caves in the side of the riverbank where the catfish live.
I did not know that had a name.
And there's a giant catfish on their arm. And it's called noodling.
I did not realize that had a name, but I now know exactly what you're talking about. Oh my gosh, that reminds me of the dolphin episode, just swallow it whole.
It's so It's so gross.
That is kind of gross.
But like, it would be weird for that to happen in Canada.
First of all, you didn't even ask for consent from that poor catfish who's just living his life. Stick your whole upper arm in that thing. Okay. There's so many nasty jokes I could make, but I think I'm just going
to
move on.
The catfish didn't ask to be deep throated that day. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Don't talk with your mouth full. Okay, anyway.
All right,
women's hockey. And noodling. The name is also very insinuating. I don't like it.
I know.
Okay. Well, anyway, I'm just going to move forward like that didn't happen. Later that year, so 1998, the NCAA introduced the Paddy Kazmaier Award, and this would turn into an annual honor for who would be the best player in women's college hockey specifically. Kazmaier had recently died of a rare blood disease, but the award further entrenched the game at the university level in the United States. So essentially, once you start adding trophies and awards and honorary things, it just kind of becomes solidified in the culture.
Yeah.
Is what they're getting at. And in Canada, the first pro league would actually emerge a year later in 1999. Called the National Women's Hockey League, which is probably something you're familiar with. It was run by the OWHA and created a place for women of all ages to play at the highest level. The Beatrice Eros won the first inaugural championship, and this was played in Brampton at the same arena the 2023 Women's Worlds were played. And players on that team included Cassie Campbell and Geraldine Heaney. The league changed names and configurations many times, as something that new and robust does, just goes through different growing pains. But they began incorporating American teams, and starting in 2009, the winner received the Clarkson Cup, which was donated by the league to the league by Governor General Adrian Clarkson, in the same spirit that Lord Stanley donated that trophy in 1892 for the NHL. In that particular Clarkson Cup game, the Montreal Stars were the inaugural winners. So that's cool.
Cool.
And then a year after that, the NCAA produced its first national championship competition, the University of Minnesota Duluth beating St. Lawrence 4-2 in the title game. And then throughout the 1990s in general and into the new century, teams from the Far East were competitive in the IIHF play. In fact, one of the early stars from outside North America was actually Chinese goalie Hong Gu, named the China Wall. She was tall and acrobatic and was key to her team's success. The Chinese went to the bronze medal game with three times between 1994 and 1998, and largely thanks to Miss Hong Gu, but she ended up falling short each time, unfortunately, so that sucks. So anyway, that is the first half. The second half is going through the most recent changes and developments, which, like I said, their 2023-2024 season is the talk of the town, again, which is why I think they're really on social media. So we'll talk about that as well. We'll talk about where the teams are, how many there are, et cetera. But for now, enjoy the ad break.
Every week, you listen to the MCP host droll on and on about, quote, interesting topics. And yes, I did just use air quotes for that.
We are positive your listeners would come up with better topics than them. And so we are enlisting you to send them over so we can talk more about exciting things in the future episodes.
We highly encourage you to do yourself and other listeners a favor and start sending good topic ideas over to mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com.
We even give you permission to slide into their DMs over on Instagram at mediocrecontentpodcast and Twitter at mediocresquawks.
If you don't decide to send topics over, prepare yourself for continued intense mediocrity.
Though honestly, it will probably be mediocre either way. Thanks for trying, and good luck in the second half of this interesting podcast, air quotes still included.
Wow.
Welcome back.
Oh no.
I am so tired of this cord not stretching all the way, so I just immediately choke myself out.
Okay.
That's a good start. Anyway, it's like the women who get choked by society. No, yeah.
Yikes.
Yikes.
All right, ma'am.
Well, anyway, I hope you enjoyed the break. I certainly did. Now I have two cats. Hi, people.
Two cats.
Lynx is joining us.
Of course.
So hockey. We are now officially moving into the 2000s era and a lot of the new stuff. So it's exciting, it's relevant, and we're going to jump right in. So since 2004, the IIHF Hockey Development Camp, later also known as the Women's High Performance Camp, was apparently a very successful avenue for teenage girls from many countries, as well as coaches and staff, to learn skills and develop a passion specific to hockey. And I did not know that this existed, but apparently it does, and that's really fabulous. The mid-2000s also provided two dramatic moments in international hockey. In 2005, the Americans finally claimed their first WW gold, beating Canada 1-0 in a shootout. But the next year, they were the ones on the losing end of an even greater upset. So sorry, USA. The Swedes would knock off the U.S. in the semifinals of the Turin Olympics in a shootout, and the Sweden went on to win silver, the first such medal for a European team. So go Sweden. Also in 2004, the Western Women's Hockey League, or WWHL, is formed, and you'll see the coalescence of all of those elements later on. But basically, I just want to say as well, a shootout is just when you're tied up at the end of all three periods in a hockey game, and you have to take turns shooting at the opposing team's goals. And I think it's like best of three or something like that.
Is that you said three periods in a hockey game, and I could have sworn there was four periods in a hockey game, and I have been to a hockey game. And like,
There's three.
I don't know why I thought there was four.
There's
anyway,
three. Yeah.
Great.
Three.
No sports.
Yay, sports. There's three periods. I probably should have started with that because we did the NHL. I didn't even think to do that, so I apologize.
But it's okay.
There's three periods at 20 minutes each, and the teams switch sides for their goalies each period.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Like soccer. Kind of.
Yeah. Okay. 2005 saw Angela Ruggiero become the first woman to play in a regular season professional game in the United States who was not a goaltender. And she played for the Tulsa Oilers against the Rio Grande Valley Killer Bees in a Central Hockey League game on January 28, 2005. That night, she joined her brother, Bill, on the Oilers, becoming the first brother-sister combination to play professionally at the same time, which is super cute. Additionally, that same year, the USA ends Canada's streak of 8 straight, 9 unofficial world championship titles in a shootout, and the Clarkson Cup is commissioned by Canadian Governor General Adrian Clarkson, which we talked about, and that cup is, of course, the one that's awarded to Canada's national women's champions. The increase in popularity and participation of the women's game everywhere was finally acknowledged by the IIHF in 2008 and the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto 2 years later, when the first women were inducted into their respective halls for career accomplishments. Cammy Granato, Geraldine Heaney, and Angela James were the first honorees, and many more, of course, have followed since, giving respect to the women where respect is due, because they do the work also. Mm-hmm. And then in the summer of 2010, at the Post-Olympics International Summit in Toronto, the IIHF declared it would commit a further $2 million, I believe it's US dollars, to developing women's hockey. Part of that money was to put towards the creation of the World Girls Ice Hockey Weekend and Global Girls Game, both of which have been held annually since 2011. So that's amazing.
Nice.
And then for the United States, there was a major development that threatened the playing of the 2017 Women's Worlds in Plymouth, Massachusetts. The Team USA players had long lamented their second-class treatment and vowed to boycott the tournament if they were not offered better contracts, which,
wow.
Go girl.
Yeah.
It came down to the wire, but the USA Hockey did step up and delivered a package that was apparently representative of the women's place in the world of hockey, and they ended up going on to win gold thanks to Hillary Knight in the golden goal against Canada. So fight, and they succeeded. 2 years later, the Americans stepped up again. In Canada, the CWHL folded, leaving players that were mostly Canadian, but they did have a few American and European players, without a meaningful league to play with. So the U.S. players left their own loosely pro league, which was the NWHL, in a solidarity, and then ended up creating what would be called the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association, or PWHPA. So many acronyms. Since then, that organization led by Jaina Hefford has worked tirelessly to create a fully pro league, and that day looms closer and closer, and we may be seeing the fruits of that labor as of this season. The IIHF helped grow the game by enlarging the WW from 8 teams to 10, and in 2019, more history was made when Finland advanced to the gold medal game of the Women's Worlds, losing to the United States but relegating Canada to bronze for the first time ever. Then in 2022, the IIHF announced that a Women's Worlds would be played every year, including Olympic years, and that huge. And that year also saw a breakthrough of another sort when Sarah Nurse was put on the cover of EA alongside the NHL's Trevor Zegras, a milestone for both women and women of color. So it was really big for the sport. EA is huge. It's EA Sports. It's in the game, like that EA. And to be alongside the NHL really puts the women's league on the same playing field.
Totally.
And that's why it's so important. 2023, the IIHF held a women's summit, bringing together over 100 delegates from 50 countries to discuss topics around women's hockey. But earlier in the year, they saw a different event dominate sport headlines around the world. At the women's U18 in Sweden, a 14-year-old Slavic girl named Nella Lapusanova stunned the world with her puck wizardry, is what this article said.
Wow.
She scored a lacrosse goal in one game and another between the legs later in the tournament, and she was named the tournament MVP. That someone so young and from a country that had only modest success in women's hockey could burst into the IIHF scene spoke to a future that they said was bright. And I would say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
In that same year, the Professional Women's Hockey League is officially unveiled. This was August 29th with 6 franchises. And we'll talk about those a little bit later. The PWHL team is allowed to sign 3 players in an initial free agency period. 2023 college graduates are not eligible to be signed in during this period, which sucks, but you know, you'll have your time. And then Kelly Panic becomes the first player to ever sign in to the PWHL as she inks a contract during the initial free agency period with specifically the Minnesota team. And Kelly did become the first player in that league to kind of kick the league off, which is just like a lot of league. But yeah, basically by signing this, it's not just official, like, oh, I'm in the league. It's also solidifying the PWHL as the official women's league and starting to develop these other teams in the other areas. As of 2024, so like literally right now, the PWHL began its inaugural season on New Year's Day at the Mattamy Athletic Center in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. New York defeated Toronto by a score of 4-0. New York's Ella Shelton scored the PWHL's first regular season goal, assisted by Alex Carpenter. New York netminder Corinne Schroeder recorded the PWHL's first regular season shutout with 29 saves. Let's go, girl. Mm-hmm. And on Friday, February 16th, 2024, the PWHL set an all-time women's hockey attendance record with over 19,000 fans at the game between Toronto and Montreal, which is crazy. So it's up to the wire. It's literally this season that they're highlighting. It is considered the kickoff of the PWHL. They want this to be essentially the equivalent to the NHL. And so for this 2023-2024 professional year, these are the locations and captains of the, I believe, six teams that they have available for the Women's League. There is Boston, which is technically in Lowell, Massachusetts, United States, and the captain there is Hillary Knight. There's also Minnesota and St. Paul. This is also in the United States, and their captain is Kendall Coyne Schofield. Of course, we do have Canadian friends in Montreal and Laval, in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and their captain is Marie-Philippe Poulin. There's New York, and it's kind of both areas, but they have Bridgeport, Connecticut, as well as Elmont, New York in the United States, and their captain is Micah Zandi Hart. In Ottawa, Canada, there is Captain Brianne Jenner, and then finally in Toronto, Canada, there is Captain Blair Turnbull, which I thought was fun.
Oh, that is fun. Yeah. She spells it different than me, though.
She does, yeah. She took a page out of my book. She's like, just throw a Y in there. It's fine.
Literally.
So unlike the NHL, the PWHL has the Walter Cup, like I said briefly in the beginning. But the really cute thing about this cup is it was actually created in partnership with the global luxury jeweler Tiffany & Co., which I think is such a slay for the girls' league.
That is such a slay. Oh, my God.
Yeah, our cup is from Tiffany.
Yeah, like, suck on that, boys.
For real. So the Walter family is a leader in philanthropy and business. And they provided the foundational support that launched the PWHL, and their regular season puck drops in January 2024. Mm-hmm. And their season is actually going to end this month, June 2024. So
also for those wondering, I just looked it up because I was curious.
Sure.
The teams don't have like names.
No.
It's just the cities in which they're associated with. So there's no, it's not like the Ottawa Maple Leafs or whatever.
Right.
Just,
yeah.
Like New York.
Because the NHL has the Toronto Maple Leafs, but that's an NHL team.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
I said Ottawa Maple Leafs. I'm sorry.
It's fine. Yeah. I'm sure they all drink maple syrup. Anyway. I'm going to get canceled for that.
Okay.
I just spent the whole pod talking about Canada. They're fine. It's fine. They're wonderful. I'm sure. I know a few Canadians. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
But yes, so, and their league is also, I believe, a little bit shorter. They don't have as many teams, but also they haven't been as cohesively established for as long as the NHL, which is just a symptom of the world in all women's sports.
Totally.
So it takes a little bit to take off, then something major happens and they get a little bit of a side, like, we'll get to you later. And then they have to restart from square one.
It very much... The what's happening in the WNBA right now as well.
Yes, exactly. So the good news is it's seeing a beautiful resurgence. It's establishing something that, even though it has six teams that are technically unnamed now, who knows? Literally next season, they're able to reinstate a whole group of other teams and maybe give them names, and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But either way, amazing luck this season, girls. I hope that it all pans out the way you envision it. I hope it's been going well for you. Also, just a little plug at the end here. The Stanley Cup has already passed, so somebody won.
Unclear
at this moment, but we'll find out on Tuesday for game 5. Obviously, like I said, this will have passed by the time this comes out, but go Panthers. Woohoo. And then just really briefly, if you want to know how to get involved, and this goes for the NHL too, in a way, they are all on TikTok. I follow almost every NHL team, including the PWHL team on TikTok. They have a lot of good content. There's some really hot people. So if you want to do a little people watching and see cute people dressed up in suits and really pretty gear, that's probably a good place to do it. Also, though,
not sponsored,
but can you imagine? Internationally, though, if you want to check out the Women's Hockey League, it does have streaming options on their official YouTube channel. So you can watch them and the games and their content there. In Canada, if you kind of want to do it TV wise, I believe it's available on TSN, Sportsnet, and CBC. And it's also in French on the RDS, Radio Canada, and IC2 TV. That's hard to say. And then in the United States, the league is also regularly on Bally Sports North, NESN, which just is the normal hockey network here. Sportsnet Pittsburgh, which I thought was interestingly specific, the Women's Sports Network, and the MSG Network. So you have lots of options to check out the games, check out how they're doing. And if you've missed out on this season, I'm sure they have a lot of playback. So get ready for next season. And honestly, that's all I have.
Thank you guys so much for listening to us talk about women's sports.
It's so fun every time we do this. I've had a really good time with it.
Yeah. This wraps up the episode of Mediocre Content. Feel free to send us an email with any questions, comments, concerns at mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram. You can follow us on TikTok. You cannot follow. Well, you can follow us on Twitch, but we won't be doing anything.
Right. We are not there
for
right
a while.
Now.
We are taking a little break. We've got some big moves coming up in our lives. So stay tuned. We'll let you know when Twitch is back up and running. And don't forget to rate us 5 stars anywhere you listen to podcasts. We will definitely see you next week.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.